This is Candace Rowan with Aquila Group of Funds. Today is September 4th, and I am joined by Tony Tanner, CFA, Lead Portfolio Manager of Aquila Tax-Free Trust of Arizona. Tony also co-manages Aquila Churchill Tax-Free Fund of Kentucky and Aquila Tax-Free Fund for Utah. Welcome, Tony.
How are you doing today, Candace? Good to be here.
I'm doing well. Thank you for joining me today. We last spoke in April following the quite dramatic market events that occurred at the end of the first quarter. Can you tell us what transpired in the Arizona municipal market in the second quarter and through the summer?
Well, you know, amidst what, you know, continues to be, an unusual and continually evolving, you know, economic backdrop, since March, the watchword that comes to mind is normalcy that's returned to the municipal bond market and the Arizona municipal bond market in the past 4 to 5 months. In that time, we have seen the new issue market return to normal with a robust level of volume. Trading activity in the secondary market has returned to normal levels, including trading spreads. And, you know, in general, market yields have responded positively to a significant move by the Fed in March to cut rates. We find ourselves actually at a point where bond prices today are virtually unchanged from where they were a year ago. So if you weren't paying attention in the middle of the year, you wouldn't really be aware of what had taken place during during March.
Focusing on the fund, Aquila's municipal strategies have a relatively conservative investment mandate. How do you think this impacted your shareholders' experience during the volatility this year?
Well, I think it positively impacted them in a couple ways. First and foremost, the fund during the COVID crisis in March experienced a much lesser degree of volatility and deterioration than we saw in other longer fund products and closed-end funds and individual bonds. And I think that that's very important because having a greater degree of principal preservation, I think, helps influence investors to stay the course. Investors who might have gone to the sideline in mid-March and not returned have missed out on a very strong rally from the bottom, but more importantly, would find themselves now facing a low yield world to put that money back to work. We've been able to maintain a very large degree of income continuity throughout the year, and that's been very helpful and supportive of the shareholders' experience.
Let's shift to the Fed now. What type of stimulative monetary policy do you expect going forward this year? News from the Fed this week seems to signal that we'll see more accommodation soon, potentially this month.
Well, the truth is, from a monetary policy standpoint, the Fed does not have a whole lot of levers left to pull. They have reduced the cost of money to basically free. We're talking this morning at a time where the 30-year Treasury bond is yielding around 1.4%, and the 10-year Treasury bond yield is solidly below 1% at 72 basis points. So from the standpoint of stimulating the economy by making borrowing costs attractive and not prohibitive, you know, there's really not much more the Fed can do. The Chairman Powell came out and spoke the last few weeks, and I think what has shifted has been a couple things. Throughout the course of the year, Chairman Powell and the Fed are increasingly recognizing that they really have not a lot of latitude in terms of stimulating inflation simply by monetary policy and altering the Fed funds rate. And I think they've also acknowledged that, you know, inflation is something to worry about when we actually have inflation. And so rather than focusing on just the 2% line as a ceiling, they're going to wait and see if the economy picks up steam, just how much steam it can pick up, and wait and see if there's a genuine need to ultimately either be less accommodative or more restrictive. And that's a very different tone than we've heard from the Fed in the past several decades. And I think a welcome acknowledgement of the limitations that they have in influencing market rates and the economy. The biggest impact and the biggest unknown going forward is the degree of continued fiscal policy stimulus that we're going to see. I think to date, the federal government's response through the CARES package and programs like the Paycheck Protection Program have actually had the very desired effects they intended in terms of helping maintain a large swath of the economy, maintaining jobs, maintaining income and taxes. The first $6 trillion of stimulus that the federal government put through in the spring and early summer, some studies have shown, has almost completely offset the expected loss of wage income that the furloughing of the economy was expected to cause. Some continued fiscal policy and fiscal support is going to be needed in a lot of key areas of the economy. For example, federal funds to support airlines and maintain employment in the airline sector is obviously going to be important to those businesses. From a municipal standpoint, what has transpired is what I expected, that the government recognizes the degree of essentiality of important facilities like airports and like hospitals, and has ensured that the funds that were needed have been directed to those essential facilities to keep them up and running. The last thing that I want to kind of observe about fiscal and monetary policy is that ultimately, the economy needs to be given the opportunity to return to normal. And it's welcoming to see that at the federal level, a lot of latitude is being given to the states in how they identify and determine what that level of normality is.
So while we work our way back to normal, I want to get your thoughts on defaults. Arizona appears to be prepared to sustain temporary revenue shortfalls, but there's a national concern around muni default risk. Looking at Arizona credits, do you consider that concern valid for your market?
Well, I don't find that to be a heightened concern in Arizona, nor in the municipal bond market in general. And I've spoken, on a variety of occasions recently that the municipal market has a degree of essentiality that's just not seen in the corporate bond market. And so we've seen far fewer actual defaults and actual cases of real meaningful fiscal strain. In the last 3 or 4 months, we've seen the city of Phoenix pass a $1.3 billion budget with little fanfare or news around budget cuts or revenue shortfalls. The state, entered the COVID crisis with a $1 billion rainy day fund. And, as of recently as a month ago, the budget estimates were showing that the expected budget gap had narrowed from over $1 billion to less than $500 million. And, in fact, we've seen some surprising positive revenue outcomes in places like building and construction. And so the whole combination of federal government stimulus and wise and thoughtful budget considerations have resulted in relatively few, if any, real gaping holes that have needed to be filled in municipal budgets and municipalities' ability to cover and service their debts.
So you talked a little bit earlier about this year's new issuance and supply in Arizona. What is your outlook for the muni market going forward regarding new issues and supply and demand as we head into the end of the year?
Well, the big shift in the municipal market has been the emergence of taxable bond issuance. Almost all of the growth, the absolute growth of issuance nationally, has come from taxable issuance. It's important to draw the distinction that taxable issuance hasn't been in place of tax-exempt issuance. Rather, it has been municipalities taking advantage of the fact that they can sell taxable bonds to advance refund outstanding high-cost tax-exempt debt and still achieve savings. So while the most recent tax modifications of a couple years ago did away with tax-exempt advance refundings, the state of interest rates overall is still enabling issuers to take advantage of selling taxable munis. In Arizona, issuance is off by about 30% year-to-date, as we have not seen very much at all in the way of taxable issuance in the state. One of the most interesting deals in the state recently, though, and I think it exemplifies the health of both the Arizona muni market and the Arizona economy, Children's Hospital sold a $250 million A-rated municipal bond issue about a month ago and received $5 billion, that's billion with a B, in orders for $250 million of bonds. It was 20 times oversubscribed, and their top borrowing cost on a 30-year bond was only 2.5%. So I think that really demonstrates the resilience of the Arizona economy, and in particular the healthcare sector, and also is a really good lesson in staying the course with munis and understanding the staying power of municipal credits. During the credit crisis of 2008 and 2009, Phoenix Children's Hospital was downgraded to BBB, and a lot of people were expressing concerns in the local market and financial press about their financial strength. And so Children's Hospital is a good lesson and example of staying the course and evaluating essential credits and in demonstrating the resilience of the Arizona municipal bond market. You know, and the last thing I wanted to add to that is I think one of the things that's also helped contribute to the strength and resilience of the Arizona economy and muni market has been the way in which the state has handled the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. One of the things that I monitor is the Arizona Department of Health Services website and scoreboard of COVID statistics, and what I find interesting is that although utilization rates for things like ventilators or emergency department beds or hospital beds are up significantly since the end of March, the fact is that Governor Ducey and Dr. Chris, I think, skillful management of marshaling resources and managing those resources in the state have actually resulted in there being more ventilators and emergency department beds being available now than there were at the end of March. And so, there's a lot that goes into trying to balance the reopening of Arizona's economy with realistically addressing the health concerns that the pandemic presents. And I think that Arizona as a state has really been a model of that balancing act. And it hasn't been perfect. But in the current climate, you can't wait to figure out what perfect is before you enact it. You have to try to take the best steps that you think are going to work and learn from those steps. And I think Arizona has done an exemplary job of that.
Let's build on hospitals and healthcare here and finish today with sectors. Are there any municipal sectors that you're watching closely for opportunities? And conversely, any red flags out there in Arizona right now?
I haven't seen any real red flags anywhere. And part of that is because the underlying economic trends that were supportive of the state are continuing on with the pandemic. Prior to the pandemic, west of the Mississippi and outside of Texas, Arizona was leading this part of the country in job growth, in employment growth, and in population growth. We're in the midst of now our fifth consecutive year where we'll be attracting more than 100,000 new residents. And those broader socioeconomic and demographic trends are going to be continuing and will accelerate as we ultimately get a vaccine for the coronavirus and we return to a more normal economy that we were accustomed to prior to the pandemic. And going forward, those demographic trends are really going to enable even smaller municipalities to sustain their budgets. And I feel very positively about the Arizona municipal bond market going forward.
As always, it was a pleasure chatting with you, Tony. Thank you for joining me and offering your insight and expertise on the Arizona muni market and the economy as a whole.
Thank you very much, Candace.
I'd like to remind our listeners that Tony's thought leadership articles may be found on our website, aquilafunds.com, and his latest quarterly market commentary is always available on the Aquila Tax-Free Trust of Arizona Fund page. Thank you for listening. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Before investing in the fund, carefully read about and consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, expenses, and other information found in the fund prospectus. The prospectus is available from your financial advisor when you visit aquilafunds.com or call 800-437-1020. Information regarding holdings is subject to change and is not necessarily representative of the entire portfolio. Mutual fund investing involves risk. Loss of principal is possible. Investments in bonds may decline in value due to rising interest rates, a real or perceived decline in credit quality of the issuer, borrower, counterparty, or collateral, adverse tax or legislative changes, court decisions, market or economic conditions. Fund performance could be more volatile than that of funds with greater geographic diversification. The fund seeks to provide as high a level of income exempt from state and federal income tax as is consistent with capital preservation. For certain investors, some dividends may be subject to federal and state income taxes, including the alternative minimum tax, referred to as AMT. Please consult your tax professional. Independent rating services such as Standard & Poor's, Moody's, and Fitch assign ratings which generally range from AAA, highest, to D, lowest, to indicate the creditworthiness of underlying bonds in the portfolio. Where the independent rating services differ in the ratings they assign to an issue or do not provide a rating for an issue, the highest available rating is used in calculating allocations by rating. Pre-refunded or escrowed bonds are issued for the purpose of retiring or redeeming an outstanding bond issue at a specific call date. Until the call date, the proceeds of the bond issuance are typically placed in a trust and invested in U.S. Treasury bonds or state and local government securities. Modified and effective duration both measure the value of a security in response to a change in interest rates. Effective duration also takes into account the effect of embedded options. The weighted average life, also referred to as weighted average maturity, is a reflection of the quickness with which the principal of an issue is expected to be paid. A credit spread is the difference in yield between two bonds of similar maturity but different credit quality. Taxable equivalent yield is the return that is required on a taxable investment to make it equal to the return on a tax-exempt investment. For certain investors, net investment income tax, known as NIIT, may apply. NIIT is a 3.8% tax established by the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act that applies to the lesser of the net investment income or a taxpayer's modified adjusted gross income in excess of an applicable threshold amount. The acronym PERS, P-E-R-S, stands for Public Employee Retirement System. The acronym PERA, P-E-R-A, stands for Public Employees Retirement Association.